Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Getting interesting takes on the coaches out there, isn't it? So to try and make a judgment from afar is hard to do, but that's just a talking point that we can discuss further out at 8 o'clock. Shane Crawford's out there. He's ready to roll, which will be good. But right now, the Paul Marsh AFL Players Association CEO has been good enough to take our call. I think he's is he up north in Queensland, I think. G'day, Paul.
Morning, Gary. How are you?
You're on the beach in your Dick Stickers board shorts. What are you doing up there?
I don't think I'd do that to anyone. No, I'm just in between. I've just been in the Gold Coast and catching up with the players in the club yesterday and heading back to Brisbane at the moment. So I just pulled over on a motorway and so I could chat to you guys.
Very good of you. Footy seems to be pretty buoyant up there. There's positive news coming out of the Gold Coast Suns, probably as positive as it's ever been. And Brisbane Lions getting their act together again.
Yeah, I think they're in a good place, both clubs. And it's been interesting, even just consuming a bit of the media up here, how much of a foothold AFL seems to be getting. So, you know, lead stories in sport and all that. So I was out with a few of the Gold Coast boys for dinner and girls last night for dinner, and, you know, fans coming up and taking photos with them. And it feels like footy's getting somewhere up here, which is great.
Oh, you deflected beautifully then. I would have been taking a photo of you, Paul, knowing that you're the AFLPA CEO. Did you have any role to play yesterday in the Nathan Murphy retirement? What level of discussion do you have around that from a Players Association perspective?
Oh, it's probably more what happens next is our role. So, you know, I mean, look, Nathan's been actually a delegate of ours for a little while, terrific fellow. But, I mean, he's been working through this for, you know, from some months since the grand final. I guess our role now is to try to help him with what's next from a compensation perspective, which I'm happy to get into. But also, you know, like any player, we'll talk to them about the transition and we'll work with them to help them, you know, with whatever they might be wanting to do next. So, I've reached out to him personally. When the time's right, I'm sure we'll sit down and work through all this.
On the compensation part of it then, where is that at and how is that expected to play out?
Yeah, so this is multifaceted. I think what I might start by saying is that Collingwood have really looked after him from a contract perspective. So, you know, he, as I understand it, will have a further year of his contract. And then we get into a discussion around what we call a career-ending injury payment. And so that's something that we've negotiated a pool of money through the CBA. We sit down with him and sort of work through, okay, his circumstances and what sort of payment he might get through that. So that's ahead of us. We also have insurance policies in place. So, you know, we've got a fund that we've set up, a superannuation fund for the players that they can opt into. And there's a total and permanent disability insurance policy there that I'd expect he would be strongly considered for. He may have also taken out his own insurances, which a number of the players do. So there's all that there that we need to work through with him. And then, as I said, conversations around, you know, what are the programs and services we might be able to help him with.
Anything that's a payout from the club, is that expected to sit inside a salary cap?
Yeah, well, we've been working through this with another player in recent times. We haven't got a final position on it, but I'd expect that there will be some sort of salary cap relief for this. And I think from our perspective, that would be the right outcome, I think. These types of things can be completely unforeseeable. Sometimes they, you know, you might think there is risk, but I don't think clubs should be penalised in this situation, you know, for players on a, you know, medium to long-term contract and then get a, you know, a shocking career-ending injury. I don't think clubs should be penalised for that.
Will they think twice, though, about in terms of and how much information is available to the player, the clubs when it comes to contracting these players on long term? Are they maybe from another club if they're thinking about making a play for another club? Will they have access to all the medical details around them and their concussion history before they do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's standard practice that clubs will do medicals before they recruit. And so, yes, there is. And
so is that buyer beware then?
Yeah, I think it is. And I don't think we want to get to a point in our industry where you know, there's we're almost precluding clubs from doing long-term deals. And so, but at the same time, you know, I could understand an argument to say if it was all excluded from the salary cap, perhaps they're actually incentivising clubs to do these sets. So I think there's a middle ground there, and I hope that's where we get to.
And I don't want to be specific, but Angus Brayshaw stuff has been public. Is that one that is still to be worked out with Melbourne and the AFL in terms of what's inside a cap and what's out?
Yeah, and that's probably what I was referring to before. And I think, you know, I've caught up with Angus recently and his agent, and I think that'll be worked through soon. And yeah, it's probably along the lines of what I'm talking about there. So it's, you know, it's a common sense approach to what is a, you know, complex issue.
Can I also ask you the question? I was speaking to Paul Marsh, AFLPA CEO, last week after the Jeremy Finlayson 3-week suspension. You put out a statement and you pointed to the inconsistencies that you saw between the way that players were handled and coaches and administrators of the game. Can you expand on that? What exactly did you mean?
Well, I just think, and this has probably become a bit of a tipping point, but I think we've seen issues in, you know, over the last few years where I don't really want to get into the specifics. And this wasn't a crack at Alistair Clarkson. I just want to say this. I think it's almost like it feels to us as though there are two sets of rules at times with players and officials, and it really just prompts a discussion around the code of conduct. And this particular clause around conduct unbecoming is open-ended. The AFL can make it up, you know, as they're going along here. And we just feel as though there needs to be more consistency. So, I mean, that's really what that point was. And I made the point directly to the AFL, and I think that'll be a discussion that we have, you know, over the coming weeks. But, you know, I think everyone should know in advance what the rules are and how they're going to be applied.
Can you get into specifics? Because, like, when you do release a statement like that, then obviously people do want to know exactly what are you talking about, who are you talking about, where wasn't it applied?
Well, I think there's been issues around, you know, race, for example, where, from our perspective, players and officials have been handled differently. And, like, these issues, there's no two issues that's exactly the same.
No.
I think it's important to say that. But I think there's a theme if we're taking a strong position on race or homophobia, and we should, like the comments from Jeremy were not acceptable, and he and I have had a conversation and others have clearly spoken to him. So we're not condoning the behaviour. We're just looking for consistency around how we deal with the behaviour. And obviously, the recent example, there were two quite close together which were in the same ballpark, and it's hard to understand where we've landed, but it's not been the only issue. So, yeah, that's the purpose of what we said.
Your future, you've been at the Players Association for 10 years, massive amount of change, you know, done a fantastic job. It was reported that Patrick Dangerfield said you need to take a break. We don't want to lose you to this game completely. So is it right that you're going to have a three-month leave right now? Which, if it is, I think it's great. But is that how it came about?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm taking 3 months off from the middle of May, and it was something that the board, Patrick, and our chair at the time, Andrew Twait, spoke to me about off the back of COVID, but we had a CBA to do last year and it wasn't appropriate. And to be honest, I felt a bit uncomfortable about it just because, you know, middle of the footy season and stepping away from, you know, a job and the responsibility hasn't sat that well with me. But as we've talked further and further about it, you know, I can see the benefit. You know, you get tired and you get probably a bit burnt out, and then it might actually be really good to refresh and get back into it. And I think the other real benefit of it is it gives our executive team and broader staff an opportunity to go about this, and they're really, you know, great and capable people. And so we're really fortunate we're going to have you know, some others that will be able to step up and into the role. And yeah, I think we're in a good position to do it right now.
So I think it's great too. We've got Graham Wright on the back of a premiership who has taken time away from the Collingwood Footy Club because he also felt, well, you know, the pressures of the job and with the great support of his organisation. So I think it's a really positive and progressive mood. Who's the one that we can go to, though, when we need to? Who's sort of stepping into your shoes?
Well, that'll be announced soon. So, you know, once that decision's made, we'll obviously let everyone know. But, you know, we've got a really strong and capable group of people. So, you know, hopefully you'll be able to talk to multiple people at the AFLPA. Yeah, over
she's, next she's saying he's going to have to be replaced by four or five.
I'm not saying that at all.
I think three, maybe. New AFLW GM of football was announced yesterday, Emma Moore, and one of the things that they stated was that they needed to embark upon a period of consolidation with the AFLW. Is that how you read the game and where it's at right now too?
I don't know Emma. Obviously, we look forward to meeting her when the time comes. Consolidation, I'd like us to be ambitious on AFLW. So, you know, I think growth is where we'd like to see it, and we'd like to see more games. And, you know, there's a lot we think riding on increasing the number of people who are watching television at the games, etc. So, yeah, consolidation, hopefully a bit more ambitious than just that.
So can I read into that that you're a little bit disappointed that that's the approach they're going to take?
Oh, I don't understand it enough yet to know what that actually means. I got a message from Laura Kane last night letting us know of the appointment, but I think, you know, growth is where we want it to be, and I think we're holding a number of forums with the AFL that are called growth forums, so I think there's a push from the players to keep expanding AFLW as quickly as we can. So I don't actually understand. I need to have a conversation with them around that particular point.
Do you think your constituents, do you think they're going to be upset by that statement that was made?
I don't know, Tim. It's not a conversation I've had a time to have a chat to them about yet. And I think the context of that's important. So, as I said, maybe let us have a conversation with the AFL and unpack that a bit.
A little antennas are going off here. Would you expect that to be a robust discussion with Laura and Emma?
Oh, well, I think, as I said, our position on growth for the competition is not a new one. We've talked about it plenty, and, you know, I think unashamedly ambitious for AFLW. We see that this industry has got, you know, most clubs have got 50,000 plus members, and in our view is we should be converting them to the W competition as well. So we're going to be ambitious on this, and, you know, well, our job is to keep challenging the AFL with these sorts of things, and so we will do that. But I'd also note that Emma's background is in growth at NAB, and I think, you know, that probably means she's well placed to come in and look at how we can translate that to AFLW.
Hey, Paul, before we let you go, we've got a new segment here called Gary the Nerd. His stat this morning was that your old man, Rod, and Dennis Lee ended up with the same number of test dismissals. Now, that would have been something that you were familiar with, is that right?
I was, actually. Yeah, we used to actually have a one of those Tony Gregg memorabilia pieces at home that had that exact stat for both of them. So, yeah, I was. 355, actually. I'll give you the number.
Nicely done.
No, Nerd Gary's already given us that.
Nicely done, Paul. Hey, drive carefully. That is a very busy road that you're on. So drive carefully, and we look forward to having a chat and maybe discussing how that conversation went with the AFL when you're back here in Melbourne.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
Paul Marsh. Have a good break.
AFL PlayStation CEO. I can see your ears. No, I can't see your ears because you've got headsets on, but I can see the headset start to quiver when your news antenna goes off, and mine started to go as well. I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that discussion.
I think there are two completely different sets of views there. One from the Players Association, who represents the players and where they think the game's at and what they want to see happen and accelerated, and where the game conveners now sit.
We'll get back to that, old newsman.